better to have a slightly botched mission on one's record than a complete failure of command. That didn't surprise Ulla at all. Jet Nebula had anticipated exactly this outcome. He had made the fleet do what it needed to do, knowing full well that his role in events would never be recorded. The only weak link in his wild plan had been Ulla himself. Anyone less confident, less sure of himself, would have killed Ulla out of hand for fear of his secret getting out. But Jet had let him live. And now Ulla would repay that favor the only way he could, by making sure that both sides believed the fake version of how things had played out over Sabaddon. It wasn't a complete whitewash, of course. Troopers would be telling wild stories about Sabaddon for years, as troopers always did when wild stories were demanded. No one would believe them, though. And there the matter would finally rest.
What of the Mandalorian?
Watcher 3 asked.
Gone! He left long before reinforcements arrived. Once the Hexes were on the run, he presumably had no interest in the outcome of the battle.
Why invest so much in tracking the Cinzia to its source, and then play no role in what happens? That doesn't make sense.
He was just one Mandalorian, who happened to be personally involved, remember? A raider operating on little more than his own initiative. Xandret might have hoped for some kind of alliance with the Mandalore, but it's clear he was no more than idly interested. Had he believed the Hexes truly remarkable, he would have sent more than Striver to deal with them.
And they weren't remarkable.
I leave that for more qualified people than me to decide, Ulla said, safe in the knowledge that Watcher 3 would have a markedly vague intelligence on that score.
Again, Colonel Kalish wouldn't want to be remembered for being routed by a gaggle of droids. Better instead to paint his early losses as the result of a Republic ambush, and minimize all involvement by the Hexes, as Captain Pippoliti had. None of the surviving records would contradict either story, thanks to Jet. Sometimes the smuggler's brilliance overwhelmed Ulla, along with his utter gall. Where was he now? Ulla would have given his left hand to know.
The Minister is displeased by your demotion. You are to make every effort to regain your former post.
Now that was interesting. Not only was it a completely unreasonable demand that Ulla should have betrayed the Republic while at the same time keeping his position under the Supreme Commander, but the urgency with which they expected him to get back into Stantor's good books suggested that there were no other operatives in that department. Ulla would bear that in mind in his future dealings with both sides.
Yes, sir. I will keep you informed on my progress.
Dismissed.
The holoprojector emptied. Ulla didn't move. Before he had counted to 10, a new face appeared before him.
Hello, Ulla,
said Shulis Kamar, Minister of Logistics.
It's been a long time. I was becoming concerned.
Once Ulla would have been struck dumb by this unprompted overture. In their previous dealings, he had invariably been the supplicant. For her to call him, out of the blue, bespoke a considerable alteration of their dynamic.
My apologies, Minister, on many accounts. The search for the world I told you about did not go well, and the resources I had hoped to provide the Empire went unrealized. I can only assure you that the enemy did not get the better of us.
Well, that's something. I hope you're not too disappointed.
No, Minister. My role here will be much reduced, but I am sure others will rise to take my place.
There will be others, yes. None like you, though.
She smiled.
I've always admired your passion, and found our conversations to be thought-provoking.
Minister, on that matter, I fear...
Yes, Ulla?
I fear I may have been mistaken in my former opinions.
Her smile slipped away.
How so?
This was the one lie he allowed himself to tell.
During the course of my mission, I worked closely with Darth Kratos and his apprentice, and their actions persuaded me to reconsider the prejudices I held regarding them. I see now how foolish I was to dismiss them so readily. They are crucial to the war effort, and integral to the proper functioning of the Empire.
The guarded cast to her face eased.
I'll confess to being relieved, Ulla. It was a dangerous heresy you had embraced. Well meant, naturally, but not one that can be tolerated at any level of governance.
I see that now. You were very forgiving, Minister.
Nonsense, Ulla. We're friends, and friends forgive much.
He wondered if part of her was disappointed. There must have been some advantage, even if merely psychological, to having a private informant intent on maintaining her own advancement. If so, she hid it well.
I am tired of seducing you to my way of thinking, Shulis Kamar,
he said to himself, thinking of Lorin and Shigar, who had both rescued him from terrible fates, and the calm stoicism of the Grand Master Satil Shan. The survivors of Sabaton would be changed forever by what had happened to them there, and he was no different.
I am persuaded that there is more to governance than just rules, laws, and discipline. A culture must have a heart, too. A strong heart that never falters. Thank you, Minister,
he said, and offered her a respectful bow. She concluded their conversation with a hollow platitude and signed off. Ulla wondered if he would ever speak to her again. Probably not. Friendships of any kind were difficult to maintain in the intelligence business, all the more so when one had been demoted. In the coming weeks, he would consider the benefits of playing both sides against the other, attempting to juggle the interplay between them as Jet had. He didn't have access to an army of unstoppable hexes or a droid that could take over entire fleets. But he was coming to believe that maybe the end did justify the means, sometimes. If he could guide the Empire and the Republic away from war, or at least spare their citizens the worst of their excesses, then that could be a good thing. And a real thing, not fake like everything he had tried before. He would be on his own side, at last, as Lorin had been when she had been discharged from Special Forces, on the side of the trillions of ordinary people trapped in a warring galaxy. He stood in his tiny apartment and considered his next move. Search for that bug? Draft a coded message for the Aetherian he had spoken to in Strategic Information Systems? Sleep? Ulla didn't know just yet, which in itself was a pleasing thing. The walls might be closing in around him, but his horizons were broader now than ever. Even Coruscant didn't seem as cursed as it once had. Lorin was back in the Special Forces. Satisfaction fairly glowed from her face when she talked about the future.
We can drink reactor cores and talk about old times.
No mention of Shigar or any of the other survivors of Sabaton. That, at least, gave him something to look forward to. Chapter 48. After hours of waiting, Shigar's moment had come.
We find you ready for the trials, Shigar Kanji,
said Master Nobile.
You will be unsurprised, I think, to learn that mastering your psychometric powers was only the smallest part of your journey.
Shigar wasn't surprised, but at the same time, he couldn't hide his relief. He bowed deeply before the holographic images of the High Council members, many of whom he had yet to meet in person. Brooding Wenz Elusis, brilliant Giphis Fane, young Auric Trelis, the newest member of the Council.
Thank you, Masters, he said. I'm sure I won't disappoint you.
Tell me how you resolved your agreement with the Sabarish,
Master Nobile said.
That was not mentioned in your debriefing session.
I'm afraid it remains unresolved, he said. The agreement was expedient at the time, but it was always likely to become a liability. She used a homing beacon to find the world herself, so I've no qualms about allowing the Republic there first. She can claim no disadvantage since the world itself has fallen to no one.
There's the damage to her palace on Hutta,
said Master Fane.
And the very public loss of face. Suda Nemro must be rubbing his hands with glee.
And there must be ramifications for dishonoring her, no doubt.
Yes, Master Nobile. I believe there is a price on my head.
We've all had one of those at one time or another,
said Master Trelis, with a wry smile.
Don't lose any sleep over it, but do keep an eye out.
Thank you, Master. I will.
Shigar knew what they were trying to say. Don't expect to play this game without breaking the rules. You've done it once, and you'll do it again. Get used to it. It was Lorin all over again. The squabbling of hut crime lords didn't worry him in the slightest. He had much bigger concerns.
May I address the council freely?
He asked.
I think you should,
said Grandmaster Shan, the first time she had spoken during the discussion. He had almost forgotten she was there, standing quietly in the corner of the audience chamber they had requisitioned.
There's been something on your mind ever since Sabaddon.
It's true, Master. I'm not sure where to start.
Start with what pains you the most.
He had never thought of this new understanding as painful, but he saw that it was true. It burned in his chest like fire.
So many people have died, he said. For nothing. Don't tell me that this is what it's like in wartime, because officially we're not at war. Xandret and her hexes weren't our enemy. Darth Kratos was in fact our ally for a while. Yet they are all dead. I see no sense to it.
Go on, said Master Nobil.
He tried to explain himself clearly.
This whole affair is endemic to the current crisis. The Sith are on the rise. We are on the wane. The Mandalorians and the Hutts stand between us, creating confusion and jostling for advantage. Our options are limited. If we do nothing, millions of people die. If we fight back, we engage with them at their level.
Tell us your solution, Shigar,
said Master Trelis.
Attack now. The war is coming. We all know it. So why sit on our hands waiting for the Emperor to make his move? Preempt him before he has a chance to consolidate his power any further. Use the element of surprise while we have it. Don't expend lives for nothing.
The owners of those lives might question the necessity of it,
said Master Nobil.
There is much talk of how we caused the current misfortune by making enemies of the Sith in the first place. Starting a war now would not ease those misgivings.
When we've won the war, people will see the necessity for it.
And if we lose?
Asked Master Fane.
We must not, Shigar said. We cannot, and we will not if we act quickly enough. With every day the Emperor grows stronger and we grow weaker. How many spies and traitors erode the fortresses we've built around ourselves? How many fruitless battles must we fight before everyone in the Republic deserts us? How many other Sabaddans are out there waiting for us? The next one might be the one that finishes us.
Our mission is to promote peace,
said Master Nobil.
Have you forgotten that?
Never, Master. But there are degrees of war, just as there are degrees of peace. An early strike might spare the galaxy from total war.
But at what cost? Remember, Shigar, when you used to argue for justice for the billions of ordinary people caught between the two sides in this conflict? If we act now, their deaths will be laid at our door. Do you want that on your conscience, my young warmonger?
No, Master. That is, I don't. I just...
He looked down at his hands, so startlingly unburned after holding so much power on Sabaddon. If he could do it, why couldn't the Jedi Council? That was the one lesson Darth Kratos had taught him.
I just think it's worth considering.
We have considered it, said Master Fane. And we will continue to consider it until the proper solution presents itself.
You're not the only one who feels this way,
said Master Trelis, leaning forward.
We have 1,000 young Jedi just waiting.
He might have said more, but a glance from Master Nobil stilled his tongue.
Your passion is undiminished, young Shigar. You must take care that it never rules your head. Thank you for your opinions. Come to Tython and finish what you started. When you are fully installed as a Jedi Knight, then you may play your part more fully in the times to come.
But what is my part?
He let those words sit silently on his tongue, as one by one the images of the Jedi High Counselors flickered and disappeared.
We will go together, Grandmaster Shan told him. The trials are difficult. Many try and fail, so I advise you not to be complacent.
Her face was unreadable.
I'm sorry if I've displeased you, Master, he said.
You haven't displeased me at all, Shigar. I am simply tired. Like you, I wish a speedy resolution to these times.
But not through war.
Not if it can be avoided, no. I understand that you don't see it this way, though. You are a product of your time.
He started, recognizing her words from the vision he'd had on Sabaddon.
I know what you're about to say, he said. I've seen it. You're about to tell me that I must confront the times ahead with great care. But I've already said that, so now maybe you won't.
She smiled.
It's disconcerting when what you've seen doesn't quite turn out the way it's supposed to.
That was true. The conversation had already headed off in a different direction, thanks to his intervention. Next, she was supposed to warn him that the Sith were the enemy, and he shouldn't become like them in order to beat them.
So the future isn't always laid in stone?
No. And I am glad of that sometimes, Shigar.
She put a hand on his shoulder and guided him toward the door.
You will learn to be too, I think.
She did seem tired. He wished there was something he could do to make her feel better. But how could he, a lowly Padawan, understand or even begin to shoulder the heavy load she was under? Again, a spark of predestination told him that he was brushing closely against something seen in the past.
Be kind, Shigar.
Had she meant herself all along? Had all his agonizing about Lorin been for nothing? Then another thought occurred to him.
Some roads are harder than yours have been.
Were the words so far left unspoken for him to consider now? She was talking about him. As they left the audience chamber, he decided that it was okay to feel torn. In fact, he should get used to it. There were serious challenges to come, whether the High Counselors succeeded with their diplomatic efforts or not. In a universe that demanded black and white, he would settle for gray. And when he passed his trials, he would talk to Master Trailus in private. If 1,000 Jedi Knights really felt as he did, there would be hope when diplomacy failed.
Chapter 49. Darth Howl, Dark Lord of the Sith, was less imposing on second meeting than he had been the first time. He wore a black uniform, lacking both insignias and trophies, and Axe interpreted that to mean he wasn't out to impress. That he had asked to meet her in private on his personal hunting range on Dromund Kos, she took as a mixed sign.
Pick a rifle, he said,
indicating an extensive collection lining the wall of his study.
Follow me onto the deck.
Axe selected an antique weapon with a stock made of bone. Its charge was full, and its sights perfectly aligned. She bet herself Darth Howl kept them all that way, and not just for show. She was right. The deck was an extensive viewing platform overlooking dense tropical terrain that had been cleared in patches, allowing an unobstructed line of sight to the undergrowth. The sun was at its zenith above the clouds. Conditions were as good as they would ever be on the Imperial capital. Darth Howl rang a bell. Somewhere in the trees, a cage door rattled open.
I brought you here, Eldon Axe,
he said as he raised his own rifle to scope the range.
So you could explain to me how you killed Darth Kratos.
She froze. How did he know? She had told no one, and she was sure none of the troopers on Sabaddon would have understood what had happened that day. The Hexes had killed so many people. Darth Kratos had been just one of them. Darth Howell's rifle emitted a sharp, high-pitched crack, making her jump.
something cried out in the trees below. The Dark Lord glanced at her and offered her an eerie, sharp-toothed smile.
"Don't worry,"
he said.
"As long as you are up here, you'll be fine."
She wondered how long that good fortune would last.
"What makes you think I killed him, my lord?"
"Whenever a former apprentice returns without her master, the question asks itself. It's something of a tradition, although not one you'll hear spoken of much. First you survive the academy, then you have to survive your master. That's how I earned my reputation, and I presume that's how you plan to do it, too. The question is, how?"
The rifle cracked again.
"If you don't fire soon, young Axe, I'll be forced to assume you've lost your nerve."
Axe did as she was told, raising the rifle and holding it steady against the ball of her shoulder. She couldn't remember the last time she'd fired a blaster of any kind. Certainly not since building her first lightsaber. She scanned the foliage through the scope. When a fluffy, dark-eyed head peered warily out from cover, she took a shot at it. The rifle produced an odd whining twang, but launched an impressive bolt of bright green energy in the right direction. The terrified creature exploded into a ball of flaming fur.
"I used the hexes,"
she told Howl, appropriately satisfied, as she lined up for another shot.
"How did you get them to do your bidding?"
"It's, hard to explain."
"I've not brought you here to make life easy for you."
Another shot from his rifle, another squawk below.
"You've already told us about the remnant of Lima Zandrit present in all the droids. What did you call it again?"
"The Aminoid."
"Yes. You mentioned in your report that you and the Jedi Grand Master were both able to influence the Hexes thanks to the Aminoid. I didn't realize that you were able to do so to such an overwhelming degree."
"That wasn't how I did it."
Her second shot missed. He was beating her 3-1.
"Be assured, young Axe, that I'll get it out of you one way or another."
There was no denying the threat now. She sought the same steely strength Satil Shan had demonstrated on Sabaton.
"There was something I omitted from the report, my lord,"
she said.
"The Amnioid didn't exist solely to control the Hexes. It was designed also, mainly perhaps, to sustain a child in a force-free Bacta tank. She was Zandrit's child. A clone."
"Of you?"
Axe wouldn't use the word me. She refused to.
"Her name was Cinzia. She believed that I was her."
"You talked to her?"
"Yes."
"Then you killed her?"
"No, but I might have. The Grand Master released her when the Amnioid tried to smother her. She died upon exposure to air."
They both fired. At the very same time, a bolt of lightning shattered the gloomy sky into 1,000 jagged pieces. The synchronicity was unintended, but impressive.
"When the Hexes weren't operating independently,"
she went on,
"they obeyed Cinzia, not the Amnioid, because we possessed identical genetic codes. They also obeyed me. It was easy to make them turn on Darth Kratos."
"And of course, that was necessary. You couldn't have killed him on your own."
"No."
It burned her to admit it, but that was the truth. And this seemed like a moment when only the truth would suffice. Darth Howell's game was utterly unlike any Darth Kratos would have played. She was learning the rules as she went along.
"The omission of the clone from your report,"
he said,
"was premeditated, deliberate, and dangerous. The Dark Council disapproves of anything that smacks of disloyalty, or of emotional attachment to anything other than the Council itself."
"I felt no kinship with the clone, my lord,"
she said.
"None at all."
She struggled to find words for the emotions that still stirred her when she thought of the pathetic creature in the tank.
Lima Zandrick refused to let her daughter go, so she created a new one, whom she imprisoned. She refused to be controlled, yet she herself was possessive and controlling. What imprisonment might she have fashioned for me, had I not been rescued from her by Darth Kratos? Was that why my memories of her have been so easy to suppress? The only thing stirred up in the entire affair was a recollection of her screaming. I think, in short, she concluded, that I had a lucky escape, and a clone too in the end.
Did you order the hexes to commit suicide?
That I didn't do, she said, but I probably could have ordered them not to.
He nodded.
It was the Amnioid then.
This time, yes. Lima Zandrit lost her daughter twice. There was nothing else to live for. Not even revenge.
So instead of becoming their master, you let them die.
Darth Howell lowered his rifle and fixed her with an obsidian stare.
Some might find it puzzling that you did not use the hexes to fulfill your vendetta against Dao Striver and then go on to conquer the galaxy.
Yes. I could have been Emperor, she thought,
then said.
The thought did occur to me, but the Mandalorian had already escaped by then, and I remain loyal to the Dark Council.
Some might say that your exposure to the Grand Master of the Jedi addled your thoughts. Some might use this as an argument to never trust you again.
I don't care what people say.
You only need to worry about what the Dark Council decides to do about you.
I met with them yesterday. They... You said...
Many things are said, Axe, and many things are done. They are not always the same.
She knew it.
So, are you going to have me killed?
He laughed at her and raised the rifle. Another shot, another scream of pain.
That depends entirely on how you spin it, he said. Were the fugitives punished?
The fate of her mother and the clone left her in no doubt on that score.
Undoubtedly.
Did the planet fall into the Republic's hands?
No.
So you survived where your master did not, and you returned with valuable intel. You are strong and determined, like your mother. You deserve nothing but admiration and a close eye. If anyone does learn the secret about the hexes, the explanation is simple. Your loyalty to the Emperor is such that you would never attempt to unseat him. Note that I said Emperor, not the Dark Council. It's a Sith's job to try to unseat us. That's why we have to keep a close eye on you. Fire the gun.
Axe closed one eye and stilled her hammering heart. Perhaps she would survive after all. The creature in her sights did not survive, and neither did two more that came to investigate. She wasn't going to tell Darth Howell that the only reason she had not spared the hexes was because trying to control them would have undoubtedly backfired. Riddled with the twisted spirit of her mother, the hexes would have turned on her eventually, and she would have ended up as trapped as her clone. Far from becoming emperor, she would have been a bitter princess in a cage, shouting for help at an empty galaxy. Better that it all disappear into a black hole, literally and metaphorically, and she get on with her life. Her life, however much of it she had left.
Why did you invite me here?
She asked.
It wasn't to grill me on my report, or to offer me advice.
True. You are young and inexperienced, but you are observant, and you survived this crisis unscathed. Perhaps you are hiding your true feelings well, or you are more resilient than you look. Either way, you can be useful to me. I brought you here to offer you an alliance.
Axe didn't even see what lay down her sights.
What kind of alliance?
One considerably more to your advantage than the last one. Darth Kratos deserved what came to him. His methods were unreliable, his philosophies dangerous, and his ambition unchecked. It was therefore inevitable that he would fall. The only question was, how far would you fall with him?
She didn't answer. Darth Howell's teeth gleamed faintly in the night.
Darth Kratos failed you, just as my last apprentice failed me. It's time to look beyond failure and see the successes awaiting you and I. With my power and your potential, can you imagine what we might accomplish together? We might shake the Supreme Chancellor from his seat and earn rewards beyond our wildest dreams.
She wasn't thinking that far ahead. All she had in mind was how useful it would be to have a master actually on the Dark Council, not just dreaming about it.
What happened to your last apprentice?
She liked to keep pets,
he said, taking aim and dispatching another hapless furball down below.
And now, I keep her in the observation dome directly above our heads. She loves it when I entertain guests.
His smile was cold and vicious, and something about it thrilled Ax to her core. Darth Howell needed her, and she needed him. There was no shame in admitting it. There were bigger games to play now. Dow's driver could wait. When she needed to feel anger in its purest form, he would be there, ready to inspire her. It didn't matter where he was or what he was doing. The longer her vow remained unfulfilled, the greater her anger would become.
The end justifies the means,
as he himself had said.
I would be honored, my lord.
Good. And I will accept you as my student. You will put the messy business of your mother behind us, and we'll both look forward to slaughtering the Jedi scum in their beds. And most important...
He winked like the chopping of a guillotine.
Most important of all, my young apprentice, we will both watch our backs.
Epilogue. Tatooine. There was no shortage of cantinas on Tatooine, nor of cantina brawls. Akshay Shanka had come in second in yet another combat tournament, and emotions were running high. There had been riots around the arena, and several full-blown shootouts had rivaled those of the contest itself. Dow's driver wasn't there to fight, however. From the shadowy depths of the wing and wanderer, the Mandalorian watched the arrival of the human who called himself Jet Nebula with a keen eye. The smuggler had a sandy air, as most people did on the desiccated planet. His gray hair was as wild and his uniform as space-worn as ever. The droid trailing him had earned a couple of extra dents in his travels since Sabaddon, but they looked much as Stryver had expected. They were watchful, in a way that older warriors learned to be. Jet Nebula looked around the bar, saw the impassive Gectal sitting alone, and performed a subtle double-take. Then he held up two fingers to the bartender, who chattered confirmation, and he and the droid pressed through the dusty crowd.
Fancy meeting you here.
You recognize me?
Dow Stryver, in the flesh.
You look better with your helmet on. Stryver showed teeth in a way that might have been mistaken for a smile.
In my culture, this expression is considered a challenge.
Come on. I know you can take a joke.
He pulled up a chair.
Besides, you're obviously waiting for me. I reckon I'm safe. At least until you tell me what you want.
I've come for the droid.
Nebula raised an eyebrow.
He's not for sale.
I'm not offering you money.
Two tiny glasses clunked down between them. Stryver made no move to pay, and neither did he. He obviously had a tab.
Good fortune in battle, Nebula toasted. May all your eggs spawn hatch as soldiers.
You know about that, too?
I've got a good sense of smell. and I've transported some life paintings from Hosh Ishia once. You've a nice planet there, if you breathe poisonous gas. Stryver raised the other glass and tipped the fiery liquid down her throat.
I was wrong to take you for granted,
she said. It's not your fault. I go out of my way to give a certain impression.
I am not apologizing. I am offering you a compliment. Few deceive me.
We both have our masks. Do you keep your tail trimmed to fit into that armor? Or have you had it permanently removed? She shook her head, unwilling to be deflected.
I've been looking for you ever since the Sabaddon affair.
I'm gratified it's taken you so long to find me.
The word on the grapevine is that you've been shopping technical data to the black market. What kind of data?
He shrugged. Everything I had in the hexes, which wasn't much. Chemical analysis, video footage, a sample of their subspace code. I sold it as a job lot to a character called Shavak. Don't worry. There's nowhere near enough for him or anyone else to rebuild them. She let him believe that this was her concern. If he did in fact believe it, he was a man of many masks. In Tassal Barisha's palace, he had been careful not to play things too smart, lest he be considered a threat, while at the same time he was reinforcing his value as the man who had found the Cinzia, and who might find other bounties like it, in order to avoid being conveniently disappeared. While the Hutts had been watching the envoys, the smuggler in their midst had kept his eyes and ears carefully open. In the same way, he had pulled the strings of the Republic's puppet envoy, making certain the Zandrid affair ended to his advantage. He might be doing much the same thing right now. You know, I'd make an excellent Mandalorian, Nebula said, were I that way inclined. Stryver stiffened in her seat, resisting the urge to reach across the table and tear his puny head right off.
Explain,
she growled. We both have a sense of irony. He signaled at the bartender for another round of drinks. And our goals are the same. I mean, seriously, you engineered the whole Sabaddon thing for the start, right? You gave Zandrit coordinates for a meeting that would take her through privateer-invested space. You knew where the ship would end up once it was caught, and what the Hutts would probably do with it. Then you hopped around the Empire and the Republic, escalating the situation. You wanted people to think that you were chasing the Cinzia to stop it from falling into anyone else's hands. But in fact, you were doing the exact opposite. That's why you didn't kill any of the players you came across. You wanted a fight over the hexes just as much as you wanted to erase your own involvement in it. The drinks came. Stryver let hers sit untouched on the table as Nebula went on. You were testing the Empire's and the Republic's responses to the hexes. You wanted to see who has the edge these days. Has the Republic recovered from the near beating you gave them a decade ago? Has the Empire grown strong enough to be considered a serious contender in your next campaign? I'd say the results were tied, which suits me. What did you think? Who's Mandalore going to fight next when he gets tired of working for everyone else? That's the question I bet every Jedi and Sith would like answered right now. He sculled the contents of his glass without taking his eyes off her.
Where does the irony come into it?
She was careful not to give him an answer. We have no leader. Do you remember that? I'm sure you do. And I'm sure it struck a chord. Your kind is of a fairly individualistic bent, as is mine. We sympathize with Lena Zandrit's desire to follow her own path, even if we don't share her methodology. After all, we don't have the army of droids that allowed her political indulgences, an army that was probably more about building and terraforming originally than fighting anyone, until we showed up. And that's where the irony lies. The Emperor certainly didn't endorse Sandrid's egalitarian aspirations, and I'm positive the Supreme Chancellor would have disapproved too. Empires and republics dislike those with the capacity to overturn their regimes. In that sense, our two squabbling friends are more alike than they prefer to think. And Sandrid's political meme might have been even more dangerous than her hexes had it escaped. Stryver nodded.
thinking of the stratified hierarchies, bureaucracies, and underclasses she had witnessed in both Empire and Republic, all foaming with discontent. Not all of it brought out by the Cold War that had existed for more than a decade now. It wasn't impossible to imagine either regime being overturned by a rebellion from within. Just as dangerous, however, and far more important, was the possibility that the two rival factions might one day unite against a common enemy, as they had against the Hexes. Keeping the two at each other's throats was therefore vital, from a Mandalorian perspective.
Are you nodding off? Jed asked. Or agreeing with me?
Stryver focused her thoughts.
I am thinking that the most dangerous thing in the galaxy is an ambitious serf.
As every exploitative regime discovers to its cost, when those who do the work decide they want to keep the profits for themselves.
What would happen if droids ever came to the same decision?
It would mean the end of civilization as we know it. Luckily, the Hexes weren't ambitious per se. Just badly programmed.
I'm not talking about the Hexes. I'm talking about Clunker.
Nebula showed enough teeth to suggest that his smile might be a threat, too.
Don't you think we'd already be his slaves, if that's what he wanted?
You tell me what he wants. What motivates a machine that can take over Imperial and Republic ships at will, and then just run away?
Not power, glory, obviously. Or profit. Otherwise, I'd be a trillionaire. Sometimes he does what I ask him to, sometimes he doesn't. So it's not about obeying me. To be honest, I've been trying to figure him out for years, and maybe no closer to the answer than I was when I started.
You didn't make him like this?
Not a chance. It was a mistake. Some kind of factory error. And he'd been scheduled for melting when I found him. His brain had a reset problem, apparently. Every few minutes he'd shut down and lose his memory. A droid with no capacity for storing incriminating evidence appealed to me. So I nicked him and patched him up as best I could. These days he can manage days at a time without flatlining. But it still happens. The only things he remembers are me and the ship. I guess because we were where his life really started. Stryver peered up at the stationary droid.
So he won't remember Sabaddon and what happened there?
No. He's reset 4 times since then. I've come to think it's all connected. Like his thoughts get too big for his brain to handle, so it shuts itself down periodically to stop him going crazy. After all, what could be worse than a droid with ambition, as you put it? You've seen what people do to them when they get ideas.
And with good reason, when it came to the Hexes.
Clunker is no Hex. He's just a damaged droid struggling to cope in a big bad universe.
Then perhaps the time has come to relieve him of his burden.
I advise against trying.
I advise against resisting, Jeek Karen.
Something hardened in his eyes. Stryver stood and reached for her carbonizer. She was never entirely sure what happened next. Clunker moved. That was expected. She had planned for that. But the attack didn't come from his direction. It came from 4 other angles simultaneously, and she was flung back into her seat by convergent energy pulses. Her suit sparked and smoked. Her limbs shook. For a potentially fatal moment, her vision grayed out into nothing. Then she recovered. And the crowded cantina was exactly as it had been, except that the smuggler and his droid were gone.
Better drink up,
chittered the bartender, indicating the glass still sitting before her.
He asked us not to kick you out immediately, but there's a limit to my generosity.
He asked?
She snapped her mouth shut as her brain caught up. He had been coming here for days. That was how she had found him. She had thought him wasting money on fellow gamblers and lowlifes, when in actual fact, he had been preparing a trap. For her. The crowd studiously avoided her challenging stare. Stryver laughed on the inside, profoundly pleased on 2 points. 1, she was still alive. 2, it was good to have a worthy adversary. Dow Stryver had come a long way from her pit-fighting days, when a young Gectal's life was cheap and expected to last not even a single week. She had accrued considerable glory since then, and considered herself the living embodiment of the Mandalorian creed. War was fought by individuals, not by emperors and politicians. Battles were decided by people, whose names might never be recorded in history. But the point wasn't history, or even who won. Anyone who strove hard enough could become a hero. That was the point. Her enemy understood. It was important to her that he did. She had traced his history backward from captain to first officer of a very different vessel, where the trail had ended. But the captain of that ship, Jeke Karan, had had a reputation for being entirely too smart for his own good. He made enemies among several cartels and ultimately disappeared. It was a simple leap to wonder if one had taken the place of the other.
They might never be on the same side again, Stryver thought, but at least from now on, they would be playing the same game.
She downed the liquor and shouldered her way out of the Wingan Wanderer into the dry glare of Tatooine. With her helmet back in place, she was just another Mandalorian, one among many on the gladiatorial world. She would search every spaceport in the city as a matter of course, even though she suspected the Auriga fire would slip through her fingers once more. Then she would report to the Mandalore. If required to do so, she would hunt her enemy to the ends of the galaxy, and she would be ready for him when they met again. If not, she would go back to studying the Empire and the Republic, safe in the knowledge that there would soon be glory enough for everyone. War was coming. The certainty of it warmed her warrior soul. She raised her eyes to stare at the sun and wished the man who called himself Jet Nebula good fortune in battle. This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, The Old Republic, Fatal Alliance by Sean Williams. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Dan Zitt. Star Wars, The Old Republic, Fatal Alliance is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2010, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.